Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
If you flew Pan Am, there's a decent chance you heard that playing over the sound system of the aircraft before the doors were closed and it prepared to take off. Julia Cook, journalist and travel writer, is author of the new book, Come Fly the World, the Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am. And if that music brings back a memory to you, perhaps you worked for Pan Am, perhaps you're a flight attendant now, but you've heard some of the stories about earlier days in the profession, or you were a flight attendant of the past, I'd like to hear about your experiences. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Julia, so good to have you with us. How close-knit are many of the women who flew, who were on Pan Am jets, still today in their retirement years?
Many are remarkably close-knit. There's an alumni organization called World Wings International that connects a lot of the women. And really, one of the first things that drew me to them was observing these really, really strong bonds that were forged in different places around the world and by these women who were all very, you know, curious, interesting, smart, competent women.
I met a group of them at Cedars Sinai. I was at a hotel to do an event for Cedars, and they were in for a previous event. I walked into the ballroom to talk with one of the organizers of the event I was doing. These women were in there doing a photo op, and they presented the hospital with a check to help with the work that Cedars does. And they called me over. We started talking, and I almost missed my event. They were so interesting, and to hear their stories about flying with Pan Am, really remarkable, the kinds of experiences open to those women. And they were all women at that time.
They were. And, you know, exactly what you're describing is almost precisely the experience that I had that first drew me to the subject as a writer. I went to an event at the TWA terminal in New York. The Pan Am terminal at JFK was torn down some years ago. And I met these two incredibly charismatic former stewardesses who were, they were just so smart. The way they talked about geopolitics and history was, they had this casual intimacy to what they referred to. And they talked about people and places with a level of authority that I found remarkable. And they were also incredibly spontaneous and open to new experiences. And I wanted to know absolutely everything about them.
Well, and you really highlight that in the book. First of all, this is a highly selective process to be hired. Very small percent of the women who applied were chosen. There were very rigid criteria in many different areas. And these were women who, by definition, were to some degree risk takers, or at least they wanted to see the world. They wanted to learn new things. And as you say, you see that even now, decades later.
Absolutely. That single phrase, I wanted to see the world, was what almost every single one of them told me when I asked them why they had begun to fly on Pan Am. Their drive to get out into the wider world was just insatiable. It was remarkable.
So let's talk about how rigid the criteria were for employment for applicants. What did they have to meet?
So they had to meet a number of what we would now be able to see as pretty sexist requirements. They had to be a certain height and weight, and they had to be really quite pretty, especially in the early 60s. The women that were sought for the position really met a largely, you know, white, feminine, stereotypical, attractiveness profile. That began to shift a little bit, which is not to say that they became any less beautiful, but the beauty standards widened a little bit, and the people who were assessing them were not quite as rigidly male, looking for something that fit the male gaze. But they were also very smart. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that it was so rigid, though. You had to be between 5'3 and 5'9". 105 to 140 pounds, at the time of hire, under 26 years of age and unmarried, right?
Absolutely, yeah. They had to quit the job upon either marriage or turning 35. Pan Am didn't always enforce those rules, but those rules existed. So the job security disappeared if a woman married or turned 35.
And you were going to mention, I think, about the smarts the women had to have to be hired.
Absolutely. Yeah, they had to have some college education and they had to speak two languages. And they also had to be really quick thinkers. They were in interviews. They were assessed for their ability to think on their feet and their diplomacy and their tact, because each of these flights, you know, they contained passengers who could be celebrities and diplomats and prime ministers, and also refugees or soldiers or you know, people whose experiences really ran the gamut from everywhere, every country in the world.
We're talking with the author of Come Fly the World, Julia Cook. Her book subtitled The Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am. And one of those women joining us from South Orange County, where she lives now, but she grew up in Norway, a former Pan Am stewardess, Tori Werner. Tori, thank you so much. You flew 20 years for Pan Am?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
And then I flew another 20 years with United after that.
What was it like when you were hired by Pan Am, given how rigorous that hiring process was? What was that feeling when you got that job?
You know, I wasn't really aware of how rigid it was. And when I came to my first group interview, and I saw all these gorgeous women and I was going, what the heck am I doing here? I just didn't quite understand why I was hired, to be very honest with you. And I wasn't that interested in being hired either at that point. In that point in my life, I wanted to continue with my studies and I wanted to become a diplomat. That was my goal. But of course, in those days, women were not really accepted in a lot of professions. And I had just found out that in Norway, in order to get into the Department of Foreign Affairs, I had to have a PhD, while the guys got in with a bachelor. And I was really upset about that. Mm-hmm. And I figured I want to do something else. So I was going to just take a year to fly, just for the fun of it and to see the world. And of course, then I was hooked. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Well, and I understand that you bid for the routes where you were going to go to really interesting geopolitical places, and you had a very frightening experience on the ground in Africa, right?
Yes, I did. I was flying my first 3 years of flying with Pan Am. I was based in New York at JFK, and I flew, to Europe and Africa and Asia as far as, I think as far as Hong Kong in those days. And so I really got the gamut of seeing the world. The only place I didn't go to at that time was South America and the Pacific, per se. And yes, I got in, that was when I was still on probation. I was very young and very new, green in the job and the junior person on the crew. And I guess Julia covered it pretty much in her book. It was quite interesting, especially after I got back to New York and the press was waiting for us and we were told not to say anything. And that's when I realized how big it was. It hit the newspapers and I felt, my gosh, I'm part of world events and history. And that was an eye-opener
at
the time.
Yeah, I mean, you had machine gun holding military officers come in and remove a whole delegation of people from the plane. Other members of the crew, as you described, it had gotten off. You were still there on the plane. I mean, it sounds like a terrifying incident.
It was. It was. I was, pardon me, it's kind of hard to get into that mindset that, you know, now.
Yeah.
But it was a terrifying experience, and it's something I do remember vividly this many years later.
And yet you continued, and you must have had some remarkable experiences. We'll talk with her about them coming up. Tori Werner joining us, South Orange County resident for 40 years, a flight attendant, including 20 years with Pan Am, which was arguably the most glamorous of airlines at a time when air travel had glamour. We'll come back and continue our conversation. And if you're a flight attendant or a former flight attendant, you want to weigh in on what that job is like, we're at 866-893-KPCC. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
Leave the house up a tree, lock the door, lose the key.
Chances are you've heard about the plane with the spiral staircase in first class. The plane with the two wide aisles and the three widescreen movies and the 8-foot ceilings in economy. And chances are you've wondered, who's going to get this incredible bird off the ground? Now you know. Pan Am will bring you the world's first 747. Pan Am will bring you the plane with all the room in the world before you know it.
It didn't only sound luxurious, in many ways it was. Very different experience than air travel today. You know, there were even piano bars on the upper deck of some of those wide-body jets. That's right, you could go without a seatbelt, sit in the top, and have a drink while someone played the piano. Can you imagine doing that on a jet today? But that was the world that's written about in Julia Cook's book, Come Fly the World, the Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am. In addition to Julia, we're joined by former Pan Am stewardess, one of several that are featured in the book, Tori Werner. Tori, you know, tell us, give us a sense of the comparative luxury of air travel at that time, particularly with Pan Am.
Oh, it was amazing. People would dress up in their best finery, even, you know, in economy, what rainbow class, as we called it. It was, you know, it was an event when people went to fly. It was, I don't know, I mean, it's kind of hard to explain. And of course, the passengers we had in first class were, they were celebrities, royalty. I had Prince Rainier and Princess Grace on board at one time. And at that time, I was still relatively new.
You are, is every day going to be like this?
Well, you know, it's amazing thinking back how, matter of fact, we took all these things. I mean, I didn't see it as anything special. It was okay. So, yes, it was exciting. But I didn't realize how privileged we were to live in this world. I mean, we're jet setters without really being millionaires or part of the the jet set was a big thing at the time, and we were really part of it. Now thinking back, it was really a privilege.
You weren't you in once the 747s arrived at Pan Am? Weren't you leading crews on many of those?
Yes, I was in what we called an in-flight service director on the 747s when we first got them. It was an extra position that was in charge of the whole crew, because Pan Am at the time felt that you needed a coordinator for something that large. It was so much bigger than the 707s and DC-8s that we were used to.
Do you remember when you first set foot on a 747, when you got a chance to tour the inside of one?
Yes, I flew the inaugural flight from Honolulu to LA on, I think it was March 10th. I believe it was 1970.
Wow.
And so that was exciting. And of course, it was new to all of us. And when we trained for it, which was kind of very interesting, some months before, and it was at Universal Studios, where they had made a mock-up of a 747 for a movie they were making. And so we used that mock-up that they had as our training for the in-flight service.
Wow.
So that was an interesting experience.
I can't imagine, because the planes are so, as you say, so much bigger than the 707, to walk into that, what that wide body must have felt like. Again, if you are a flight attendant now or were in the past, I'd love to hear your thoughts about it, whether they're memories or the current experience, particularly in the challenging era where you're dealing with troubling behavior often with passengers today. Did you have to deal with much of that, Tori, with passengers acting
so much? There wasn't so much rage as there is today. And people were, I mean, initially they were very respectful. I do remember as the years progressed and tourism became more prevalent. I remember in the Pacific, we had one, that was when I was based in San Francisco, and it was on the 747. There were two passengers who got into a fist fight, two males. They were apparently, they turned out to be uncle and nephew. We didn't know that at the time, but the other purser and I was a little Danish girl. She was about, you know, five feet four and very petite.
Family disputes are the worst, of course.
Yes, and they were really into it. So I don't know why, but I just got in between them. And I saw this fist coming towards me, and then I saw the shock on the guy's face, realizing he was, you know, about to hit me rather than his nephew, and he stopped cold. And in the meantime, the other little, you know, person, she came running with a fire extinguisher. We had the CO2 fire extinguisher at that time that we could really freeze people up. And she came running with that, but it wasn't needed. I mean, the fact that I got into between the two of them and the older guy, realized he was about to hit the woman, he just absolutely froze, and that stopped it cold.
We're talking with Tori Werner, who for 20 years was a stewardess for Pan Am, went on an additional 20 years as a flight attendant with other airlines as well, a very long career in the air. And she's one of the flight attendants is highlighted in Julia Cook's new book, Come Fly the World, The Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am. Julia, you have so many great stories like this. It had to be difficult to edit this book and to keep it to, you know, just the ones a book could contain.
It was very difficult. With my editor, you know, we worked to winnow it down. I think about 20% more of the book could have been included, but you know, it's so hard to cut anything.
Yeah. So for you, as you look back on this era, what is the biggest takeaway for you from what these women accomplished and the kind of environment in which they worked?
You know, one of the first questions that kept running through my head when I first met these women was, why had they been denied credit for their very real contributions to the freedom to roam that women of my generation enjoy? And I try to answer that in the book. I come away with the conclusion that they really did pave the way for younger women to move around the world with much more freedom than they had begun to fly with.
And if you meet any of the women of Pan Am of those glory years, you'll be extremely impressed and see why they were chosen for employment back at that time. Come Fly the World, Julia Cook, is her book, The Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am. Julia, thanks so much for being with us. Tori, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Coming up next, Fresh Air here on 89.3. And a reminder, tomorrow, 5 o'clock, President Biden's address, NPR coverage. We'll have it for you live. Have a great day. We'll just
fly. The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.